Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with the professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor. We're going to really get into this Dallas Cowboys-Seattle Seahawks game that's coming up on Saturday because so many implications. And joining us on Schooled is Tim Kalishaw from the Dallas Morning News, from ESPN. And, you know, Tim, I guess the one thing is, I mean, these two teams have met, four out of the last 5 years. It's been more successful right. for Seattle. There's been certainly great success for Seattle in the playoffs, no success for the Dallas Cowboys. How do you kind of get the first look at what is going to happen coming up on Saturday?
My first look is that Seattle has kind of owned the Cowboys. They've won the last three. The funny thing is, in 2014, the Cowboys were one of the best games this team's played in a long time, was beating Seattle up there in the regular season. And when they played the Packers in the playoffs and they lost on the Dez catch, the winner of that game was going to go to Seattle. And they were actually confident they could get past Green Bay. They were going to beat Seattle again. Now, I don't know if they would have, but we never got to find out. But since then, it's been all Seattle, and it's been a lot of Russell Wilson. I think you'd probably agree, last year, the pseudo playoff game they had on Christmas Eve, which was going to eliminate one team, Seattle's offense didn't have much at that time, and they weren't going anywhere until the Cowboys started handing them the football, and then Russell Wilson started making some plays. So, you know, Russell Wilson and the defense won that one, and I think I got to think both teams are pretty confident that their style of play fits, you know, what they want to do against the other team. But obviously, somebody's going to be disappointed Saturday night.
Yeah, no question about it. How different is this Cowboy team than the team that early in the season played Seattle? Because, I mean, there's been the addition of Amari Cooper, a defense that's really probably come together as well as any Cowboy defense in the last few years. I mean, how much better right now is the Cowboy team of January versus the Cowboy team of the early fall?
I think they feel like it's a lot better. It's ranked pretty high in total defense and scoring defense. They fell off a bit after getting 35 to the Giants the last week of the season, the way those stats go. But I think in week three they thought they had a chance to be a good defense, but weren't there yet. Leighton Vander Esch wasn't even starting yet. Sean Lee was still starting. And, you know, you've seen what he's done, what Jalen Smith has done. Byron Jones made a Pro Bowl as a quarterback. In week three, we still saw Byron Jones as a guy who had been a failed first-round pick who was splitting time at safety at the end of the last year. And now they were giving him his last gasp chance at corner. And then he spent most of the year doing a pretty good job shutting guys down. So the defense, I think, is the bigger deal, although the Cooper thing changed things for a while. Amari Cooper gives them a chance, you know, to hit a home run. Now, he's done that mostly, I think, against man-to-man coverage and teams making mistakes, especially the Eagles. But, he's still capable. He's a really good route runner, even against good zone defenses. I think he can make some plays, but I don't know that he can have a monster game. But I think the defense coming together, that unit, DeMarcus Lawrence continuing to lead that group, has been the biggest thing.
Well, I go back to Christmas Eve last year, and what was so noticeable, two things. I mean, number one, that there was no separation at the wide receiver position, and I guess to a certain degree with his route running, Amari Cooper has helped that out. And then the other thing was how young and vulnerable they were in the secondary because they had chased away all the veteran guys. Now at least the secondary is more seasoned now that they've been together another year, and Jones has made the move from safety to cornerback. But, you know, how good is the separation at wide receiver? And how good is that secondary?
At wide receiver, Cooper can get open. Cooper can get open on good cornerbacks. We've seen him do that since he got here. Now, Dak has to get him the ball, and that's still a little hit or miss at times. So it helps if they get a lot of man-to-man coverage, which I'm going to guess against Seattle they probably won't. But regardless, Cooper can get open. Beasley can get open short. And I think the biggest thing that happened in a quote meaningless game in New York was the plays Beasley made, not the plays the tight end Blake Jarwin made. I think, you know, those were nice. I don't think he's going to become a three touchdown a game tight end. But I do think Beasley is an important part of this team, and he can get open in the middle of the field. Cooper can get open wherever he is. And so that they're, I think they're capable there. You wouldn't call this one of the better wide receiver units, but at the beginning of the year, everybody was calling it the worst in the league, and they weren't wrong when Allen Hurns was, you know, your top wide receiver and Jeff Swain was your tight end. The secondary is better. Last year, Jordan Lewis was playing a lot at corner. He barely gets on the field, if at all now. Cheeto Bay, Awuzie in his second year from Colorado, has been a better player, made a nice interception Sunday. Byron Jones made the Pro Bowl as a corner. Heath is okay, and Woods are okay. I mean, their safeties are not great, and that's why we spent most of last year talking to each other about Earl Thomas and when he was going to come here. That didn't work out, but I think they're still a little soft at the safety position, but their pass rush tries to keep them out of trouble.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think is so interesting, because DeMarco Lawrence, you know, he had the franchise tag, he had the big season last year, good season this year, and who's developed on the other side to kind of help that pass rush?
Well, the guy they waited 4 years for, Randy Gregory, who, you know, his story is not that much different in some ways from Josh Gordon's. He spent more than half of his first 4 years suspended from the league, presumably for marijuana violations, but they don't say what they are. But he came out of Nebraska having tested positive for marijuana at the combine. He was extremely honest about it in his first interviews here, saying he needed help, and he had some ideas how the Cowboys could give him help. They've worked hard on that. And this is the first year where he's played a lot. He's gotten some sacks. He gets a lot of pressure. He looks the part of the pass rush right in, the real lean guy who just flies in there and spins and makes plays. Now, he hasn't made that many, but he's made enough that since everybody's got to worry about Lawrence on the other side, he's doing it there. And Antoine Woods has been a very good tackle playing in the middle with Malik Collins. They lost Tyrone Crawford a couple weeks ago. But don't know his status, but Antoine Woods helps a lot. So it's a solid pass rush. For a while, they were leading the league in sacks. Now they finished in the middle of the pack. They had 39. So they weren't a big sack team the second half of the year, but Lawrence still gets a lot of pressure, and Gregory helps him with that.
Yeah, no doubt, and that's the thing is, what you start to wonder now, and I know that the concentration is going to be on this game, but still, there's so many guys that have been young and have developed them. How are they going to be able to keep them all with contracts coming up in the next couple of years?
Well, you know, it helps that it's going to $200 million and that this team has a lot of money to spend, but you're right. If you're talking about second contracts for DeMarcus Lawrence, and he'll get one right away because he's been franchised once. So he's making $17 million now, and I think it would go well into the 20s to do it again. So I think he'll get a big contract right away. Actually, Jalen Smith is only a year away from that, and he plays like a Pro Bowl linebacker, even if he didn't get picked for it yet. And then you got Dak and Zeke and Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper makes $13 million next year in the last year of his Raider contract, or they can get him an extension. But they feel like that's a core you can build around. Now, the obvious question is the quarterback, and is he really the quarterback you can build around? And that's what makes this playoff game, to me and everybody else, so fascinating, because, I mean, he has been linked to Russell Wilson since he got drafted in the fourth round. You know, a round behind Russell, a guy who wasn't that highly thought of going into the draft, and for different reasons, started from day one and played really well. He didn't get to Russell's level with the team. In fact, he, you know, regressed last year and has kind of come back this year. But if you're going to pay him second quarterback contract money, he has to perform. And that makes this game, I think, a huge game for Dak Prescott.
What are some of the flaws in Dak?
To me, it's just inconsistency, because it's not like there are people who say, well, he can't throw it deep. Well, he can, and he's shown he can especially throw it deep on the run. You look at that throw he made to win the game in New York, where it's 4th and 15, and they're at the 40, 39 or 40, and he's on the run to his left and throws it to the back of the end zone to Cole Beasley. He can do it, but he can miss an open guy crossing the field 10 yards in front of him. He can throw it behind Jarwin or behind Cooper, and that's what baffles you. Is like, how do you miss that throw? That's an easy one. He'll miss two or three easy ones a game, and then he'll make some, you know, tough plays, and he's very tough minded, and he scrambles when he needs to. Everybody here thinks he should run more than he does, but there have been games where he's run a lot. But the other thing is he still doesn't have. And it's hard to know how much to put on him, but it has to be a fair amount. He was sacked 56 times this year. And I know Wilson gets sacked a lot, and Deshaun Watson, and running quarterbacks do. But Dak doesn't really run that much. He tends to get sacked just standing in the middle of the pocket and waiting a second too long to make that decision to either step up or spin out of it or throw it away. And that's something, you know, if Seattle gets four sacks Saturday night and they come at a big time, that's going to be huge. So those are the two real things, just the occasional inconsistencies and the clock in his head to tell him when to go.
Well, and I guess the other thing, too, is that he isn't great throwing into tight windows. That seems to be another thing that maybe leads to him holding the ball too long or whatever.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that's somebody's scouting report coming out of college said exactly that. He's great throwing to open receivers, but a lot of people are great throwing to open receivers. And that was the, most of us felt was the issue with Dez, because Dez doesn't get wide open. Tony Romo knew how to throw the ball 2 feet over his head and let him go get it, and he was confident doing that and confident that Dez would at least keep the defender from getting it. And Dak, you know, hasn't developed that or doesn't want to develop that. That's a high risk play, and he wants to minimize interceptions a lot more than you know, maybe Tony did. But I think he's gotten better. You've seen some throws. I don't know if he's one of the better quarterbacks at it. I would say he's not, but I think he's okay at getting balls into tight places. I don't think that's his biggest flaw. That's probably third or fourth down the list.
It is hard to believe with that offensive line that 56 sacks by a quarterback, but I think clearly with some of the injuries and some of the things that have happened to the line, while the Cowboys line is good, it's not as been as great as it has been in past years, where most people consider it to be the best offensive line in football.
Yeah, I think it's still close to the best offensive line run blocking and can be, and they open some great holes for Zeke. This is not the same unit. There's been no Travis Frederick all year. Zach Martin's missed, I think, 3 games at right guard. Tyron Smith has been an iffy player at times at left tackle. I don't know how he made the Pro Bowl. That's one of those things where an offensive lineman, once you've got three or four, you just keep getting grandfathered in for a while. They drafted in the second round a controversial pick. Not a controversial player, just they took a guard, Connor Williams from Texas. And when people thought they would take a wide receiver, a tight end, something else, and they tried to plug him in right away, and he was not ready at the left side. And so they've had kind of a mess. I think Lyle Collins is average at right tackle. So really it's Zach Martin and a healthy Tyron Smith, and that's all that's left from the great offensive line. These other guys I think are more adequate, and they got to take some of the blame for the high sack total, but I really think a big percentage of it is on Dak.
And what's been is it back problems that have kind of nagged Tyron Smith for the last couple of years?
Yes, he's had back issues. In fact, the Cowboys were doing a lot of yoga in Oxnard, which was fun to see them out on the field doing that. And Jason Garrett told me one day the big reason they were doing it for the entire team was because they wanted to do it for Tyron Smith, because they think he's the strongest guy in the league or can rank with anybody for strength in the league. But every year he wears down and has back issues, and they've got to find a way to get more flexibility in him. But he continued to have some issues this year, and he had a leg problem this year. He's not an old guy age-wise, but he's played 8 years. I think he was 20 years old when he started his first year out of USC, which, as you know, for an offensive lineman is extremely young in the NFL. And so he's got a lot of mileage on him. So I don't know if he hasn't already hit that peak up there and is heading the other way in his career.
Now, of course, one topic of conversation all year has been Jason Garrett. Looked like Jason was in trouble mid-season. They had to shake up the offensive line and do those different things. People are kind of wondering, you know, where Jason stands. But I guess I would imagine getting into the playoffs has ended that and now puts Jerry in a position where maybe he's going to have to extend the contract as opposed to end the contract.
I don't know about the extension. That's going to be interesting. But this is something we talk about write about almost on a daily basis. And I wrote, I thought he should have been fired at the end of last season. They didn't get rid of him or either one of the coordinators last year. They changed all the coaches under that level. But, you know, on his side, in his defense, he's won the East 3 of the last 5 years. There's no other coach in the NFC. And I looked this up twice to make sure I had it right. There's no other coach in the NFC who's won his own division 3 times in the last 5 years. Pete Carroll is the only one who has as many 10-win seasons the last 5 years as Jason Garrett. So if you look at the kind of the main body of work, the regular season, Jason Garrett has been very solid, and you wouldn't fire that guy. But then there's the 1-2 playoff record over 8 years. And if they lose Saturday night, it's 1-3. And then you've got to ask yourself, if you really believe this is a talented young team, is this the right guy to lead them where you want to go? The Cowboys have not played in an NFC championship game since 1995. That's 23 seasons. They used to have regular tickets there with Tom Landry and with Jimmy Johnson. So if you're ever going to get there, is he the guy? That's what I think a lot of people still think Saturday night's a big game for him just to be back. I think he's probably back. I don't think he's extended. I think he'll be a lame duck coach next season as they try to figure out who is the right guy if this guy can't win playoff games.
That is kind of amazing when you think about it. Talk about the positive things on Jason Garrett and the negative things on Jason Garrett.
The positive thing is that it's not positive for us in the media. The fact that he's so boring and robotic and we get almost nothing out of him, I think that's actually a positive. I think that's just like if you play golf, you do know it really is all about the next shot. You're not thinking about what you're going to shoot on the front nine or do I have a chance to break 80 today after getting one par. He keeps the team very focused. They buy into it. It's an extremely young team. That helps. There's only, with Sean Lee not playing, there's really nobody in their 30s playing on this football team. So they buy into his mantra of, you know, today's practice is all that matters, et cetera. And I think that works. I know for a fact he's never been good at time management. I know a lot of coaches and fans think their coach is terrible at that, but he's had issues with that. Not so much this year, but over 8 years, he's made decisions either at the end of the half or the end of the game that you wonder how a guy with a Princeton degree is making these decisions. The other thing that bothers me is he is just not, they do not have an imaginative offense. A lot of times they have a good offense, and it's more like the Norv Turner days, hand it to Emmitt Smith, have Troy throw it to Michael. It's sort of modeled after that, with the players not being quite that good, although Zeke might be close. You watch what the Chiefs are doing, you watch the Bears, you watch some of these other offenses, and you just think, why isn't Garrett and why aren't Garrett and Linehan coming up with some of this stuff? And they just don't seem to be inclined to do that. They seem to be more along the lines of keep it simple and do a few things right and do them well and beat people with that. And sometimes that works, but in a lot of big games, it hasn't worked.
Fascinating, yeah. I would imagine, though, if they do lose, is Scott Linehan going to be in trouble?
I think that would be the easiest move for Jerry to make. Now, the other decision they have to make that you can relate to, of course, is Chris Richard,
right,
who had success in Seattle, is here now, not technically the defensive coordinator, passing game defensive coordinator, whatever his title is, because Rod Marinelli still has a title. And he's already got a couple interviews lined up, and he's been, had head coaching interviews before, and they do not want to lose him. They think a lot of this year's success is related to Chris Richard, and that would make for a very interesting decision if they were to lose this game Saturday night. It would almost be, who do you value more moving forward? You know, Jason Garrett or Chris Richard with a new offensive mindset? It's a decision they don't want to make, and they won't have to make it if they beat Seattle, but it's something they may be considering 3 days from now.
Wow. I tell you what, lots on the line coming up on Saturday, and the great part is a lot to write about it and a lot to comment on it. Hey, Tim, thanks for joining us on Schooled with the Professor.
Hey, anytime, John. Appreciate it.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.